First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Senior citizens, the immunocompromised, and COVID boosters, your questions answered. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this hour, the death of Colin Powell, seniors and COVID, and the new booster shots. What are your questions? 549-2937. Join us. Then later, the Jaguars finally win a game. We'll have a recap of their first win of the season and lots of other news to share. But first this hour, sad news this morning as the pandemic continues to take its toll. Colin Powell, the first Black U.S. Secretary of State, whose leadership in several Republican administrations helped shape American foreign policy for decades, has died from complications from COVID-19, his family said on Facebook. Powell was 84. He was fully vaccinated. However, he was reportedly battling a form of cancer called multiple myeloma that rendered him immunocompromised. Now, Powell's death is a reminder that seniors and the ill and immunocompromised are vulnerable, continue to be vulnerable against this disease. Vaccinations don't provide bulletproof protection if there are lots of unvaccinated people around them. And of course, senior citizens are anxiously awaiting their chance to receive a booster shot for COVID, or they've already done so. And so the news of this prominent senior's death comes as a real blow. So what about boosters? Well, a federal advisory committee supports booster shots of all three COVID-19 vaccines currently in use. So far, the Food and Drug Administration has only authorized booster doses of the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine for those at high risk of infection or severe disease. But the other two vaccines, Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, are working their way through the regulatory process. And booster shots should be available from those pharmaceutical companies for certain populations very soon. So many questions about this. Dr. Michelle Aquino is a hospitalist at Baptist Health JAX, and she's also a medical correspondent for Action News JAX and a contributor to this program. And she's on the line now to bring us up to date. Dr. Aquino, good morning.
Good morning.
And as we talk about this, we want your calls, folks. What are your questions about boosters? What are your thoughts about the death of Colin Powell? Give us a call, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Well, Dr. Aquino, lots to share about the boosters, but first I wanted to get your thoughts about the passing of Colin Powell. Fully vaccinated, he was 84 years old and reportedly immunocompromised as he had been battling a form of cancer. Can you talk a little bit about the vulnerability of seniors and others with immune issues, even if they've been fully vaccinated, and why that's happening in some cases?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, he had a breakthrough case being fully vaccinated. And, you know, I do want to mention that Colin Powell, he is a particular patient. He's the one that we talk about, you know, patients that are undergoing cancer treatment or patients that are transplant recipients. They are the highest risks for COVID infection because their immune system does not respond the way the rest of ours do. So these are patients that were already approved for that third dose of the Pfizer vaccine a few weeks back. They were the first approval because their immune system does not respond the way we do. And so, I mean, these patients, when you look at their numbers, even after a third shot of Pfizer or Moderna, I think, their immune system would go up to maybe like mid-60%. Versus ours goes up to about 90%, you know, greater than 90% when we receive that third booster. So even fully vaccinated patients undergoing cancer treatment or, you know, transplant recipients, their immune systems are still, you know, lagging behind ours. So he obviously was at very high risk. And unfortunately, you know, I'm sure he was taking all the precautions necessary, but still, I mean, COVID can still get you regardless.
Yeah, this is a reminder that it is deadly, particularly for vulnerable populations. The thing about this that's unfortunate is that some will use the sad occasion of his death to argue that vaccinations don't work and why bother getting them. What's your response to that?
Well, I would say that in people that are receiving cancer treatments, they are definitely higher risk than everyone, and they probably would have, you know, I would say a very high mortality rate without any vaccination. So I think vaccination helps that population to have a fighting chance against COVID. I mean, they need a fighting chance. They need some help. And so the vaccinations is probably their only chance against fighting any possible COVID infection.
The other big point from this is to remind folks that when you vaccinate yourself, you're not just protecting yourself, you're protecting the vulnerable around you, whether it's Colin Powell, a child, a senior, a cancer patient, anyone who's vulnerable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and right now we still need to do better. We have, I think the number up to date is something like 68 million Americans are not vaccinated. And so, you know, we still have some work to do to really help protect everyone, because right now vaccination is not approved for everyone yet. You know, we're still talking about a large chunk of our population, 12 and under, that are vulnerable. We see Colin Powell's a perfect example, who someone, I'm going to assume he was doing everything he needed to do, taking all precautions, received his vaccinations, and still, you know, with all those resources available to him, still he passed away from COVID. So this is, you know, it's sad. It's very sad.
It's a sobering reminder that we are not out of this yet. 549-2937, give us a call. Dr. Aquino, let's talk about the local situation. What's the COVID ward like at Baptist Health where you practice? We are hearing case counts are going down. Do you feel that we are starting to dip locally when it comes to cases, hospitalizations, and deaths? What are you seeing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our cases are definitely going down. You know, in the hospital, at the peak, I would say we had probably about, six, seven full-time physicians taking care of only COVID patients, and that's about 18, 20 patients each physician. It's a lot of people, and I'm talking about just downtown. You know, and right now, I actually am the only COVID doctor right now on the wards, because our numbers are much, much less.
Well, that's
good. So the numbers
news.
Are, yeah, they're definitely dipping down across Florida. Our case numbers are going down. Our deaths are decreasing. Hospitalizations are decreasing, which, again, I'm verifying. So I think overall our numbers are looking much, much better.
Okay, so then that's great news. Let's share some more good news. A federal advisory committee says they support booster shots of all three COVID vaccines that are currently in circulation, even though the FDA has really only authorized booster doses of the Pfizer vaccine for those at high risk. So what can we expect when it comes to widening availability of boosters?
Well, I think it's going to be a seamless process, right? Once the Pfizer was approved by the CDC, because remember, the FDA advisory committee has given the recommendations. Now the FDA sits the recommendations, and they will likely approve, you know, what the FDA advisory committee approved. Once the FDA fully approves it, then the CDC needs to approve it. Once that third step is taken, once the CDC signs off and says, yes, we approve it, these are the recommendations, this is who should receive the booster, then from that moment on, you know, the pharmacies, the places that are giving the vaccines right now will be open for business, shall we say. And it should be fairly seamless, that process, once the approval occurs, which hopefully will be in the next week or two from what we understand.
And is it okay to mix and match? Say you got one type of vaccine, can you get a booster of another kind of vaccine?
No. Right now, no. And here's the issue. It's data. We don't have enough data. And what you're talking about, the mixing and matching, is called heterologous booster. Okay, that's when you use a booster from a different type of vaccine. And right now, the FDA is looking at the Johnson & Johnson and looking to approve the second Johnson & Johnson shot. And they're thinking about possibly mixing and matching, but what I'm hearing is there's not enough data for them to make a definitive decision on that yet. You know, they might surprise us. We don't have a significant amount of studies right now. There's one study from the National Institute of Health that showed, you know, people all started with a Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and then everyone was cut in three groups. They either got Johnson & Johnson as a booster, Moderna as a booster, or Pfizer as a booster. And interestingly enough, the group that had the highest percentage, increase in their antibody levels was the Moderna. So a Johnson & Johnson and Moderna booster mix seems to be the strongest. But again, it was a very small study. So it'll be interesting to see if the FDA thinks that is enough information or if they're going to say, no, we can't make a decision yet on mix and match. We need more data. So we'll see. We'll see what they decide.
And as we talk with Dr. Aquino, hospitalist at Baptist Health, what are your questions about COVID-19 booster shots? And also, we are marking the sad death this morning of Colin Powell from complications of COVID-19. 549-2937, Jennifer in Flagler County. Hi, Jennifer. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. So I recently underwent chemotherapy and had a bone marrow transplant. And got vaccinated. The doctors at Mayo Clinic tested me to see if I had an immune response, and I didn't. So they went ahead and recommended the booster shot. I received my booster shot 3 weeks ago, and I actually just had my blood drawn to get another test to see if the booster shot helped me. I do not know the results of that yet. But I think it's so important to educate people that, one, just because it didn't work on an immunocompromised patient doesn't mean the vaccine doesn't work. It just means that the immunocompromised patient has a different special immune system. And two, we are the voiceless, us, the people who are immunocompromised because of these horrible circumstances. We really don't have voices in educating people as to why they need to get vaccinated.
So, yeah.
Thank you for addressing this topic.
Oh, you're so welcome, Jennifer.
I just think it's so important to educate people that, you know, I just don't want this Colin Powell issue to support these opinions and have people throw their hands up in the air saying, oh, see, the vaccine doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. And it, Jennifer, it helps that you shared your story because you are one of millions of Americans who, for a number of reasons, have special vulnerability. So I appreciate you calling in. Jennifer, I really hope you get some good blood work back that shows that booster really boosted your immunity. So let's keep our fingers crossed for that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Dr. Aquino, so there you go. She's an American who needed a booster shot. More than 20 million Americans are now eligible, right? And millions more will be up once they're 6 months past their second shot. Isn't that right?
Yes, but again, Jennifer just spoke in that very special population, which I think Colin Powell was in also with cancer, receiving active cancer treatment, who despite the second, you know, the regular 1-2 shot of a Pfizer or Moderna, their immune response doesn't respond. And so they get a third one. So most of us for an mRNA will get two shots, but I feel like these cancer patients, they have no immune system. So we are just trying to give them every option we have to get their immune system up. And so they actually receive three shots. You know, they're now receiving that third shot just automatically just to help, you know, increase their protection. You know, and she brings a great point to cancer treatment individuals in the United States and transplant patients. You got to think of these patients. They have no immune system whatsoever, and these vaccines are barely giving them some protection, okay? So these vaccines are working the best they can for them, and they're a very unique individual group. And I want to stress, remember, you have every child under the age of 12 that is actively undergoing cancer treatment who has no vaccine option right now. They have no vaccine option. And so, you know, when we're wearing those masks in the community around people, that's why we're doing it for these poor little kids. You know,
yeah,
the ones that just have no option.
When it comes to approval for vaccinations for kids under 12, that's pretty close too, isn't it? By the end of this year is my understanding, or maybe even before that. Unless is that still the case?
Yeah, it looks like Pfizer is going ahead with it, and they're trying to see when they'll be approved. I'm hearing November, December. That's what we're hearing. And remember, this is just for 5 to 11-year-olds. 5 to 11-year-olds. And then the under 5, we've got to wait for that. We've got to wait and see what those numbers look like. So, you know, they're going ahead trying to get this vaccine approved because as there are so many people that are not vaccinated, there are so many parents that are just waiting for that vaccine to vaccinate their kids. And a lot of these parents have sick kids, and they are just waiting, trying to keep their kids as safe as possible, you know, away from COVID until they can get vaccinated.
Yeah, exactly right.
Parents, I feel for them.
I give thanks every day that our kids were old enough to be vaccinated, both fully vaccinated. It gives me peace of mind sending our youngest to high school every day. 5492937 as we speak with Dr. Michelle Aquino, hospitalist at Baptist Health. We've learned this morning that 84-year-old Colin Powell, the first Black U.S. Secretary of State, died of complications from COVID. He was fully vaccinated, his family says, yet he was also a cancer patient, apparently, which made him especially vulnerable. He had low immunity to the disease. It brings special urgency to the ongoing push to get more people vaccinated. And also, people have many questions about booster shots. Let's get a few more of you on the air with your thoughts and questions. 5492937. Kendra in Mandarin. Hi, Kendra.
Hi, Melissa. Good morning.
Good morning.
I saw that on Saturday, the Pope made a statement requesting for all big laboratories to liberalize patents and, as a gesture of humanity, allow every human being access to the vaccine. So I'd like to say that a positive step would be to eliminate religious waivers, since arguably the world's most religious and most conservative man wants vaccines to become accessible for the entire world. So why then do people need religious waivers?
Yeah, religious exemption to vaccination. What about that, doctor?
You know, that's an interesting question, because the only medical exemption to vaccination is if you actually have an anaphylactic reaction to a vaccine. So that means you have to get the vaccine first to see if you have that reaction. And if you do, then we'll say, okay, that's a medical reason. Now, religious, there's all types of religious, right? And the interesting thing about let's talk about the Catholics, because they're, you know, the pro-life group, the ones that are saying, no, we use fetal stem cells in making these vaccines, which is true. The mRNA vaccines and the Johnson & Johnson vaccines, they all use, you know, in research and development, fetal cell lines. The interesting thing about these people that are refusing vaccines based on that religious reason is, listen, Tylenol, aspirin, Tums, Motrin, Maalox, ibuprofen, Benadryl, all those also use fetal cell lines. And there's a long list of them. You can Google them online, and you will see there's a lot of medicines that we use in our everyday life that people don't even think about that use fetal cell lines. And so these people that are asking for religious exemption based on that, you know, you really have to say, I mean, you've got to admit you're not using any of these products to be able to, you know, stick with that statement that you refuse to use any fetal cell line, you know, products, because there are so many. They're pervasive in our lives. So that's interesting. I mean, really, religious exemptions should not be given based on that.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm certainly there are those who have a sincere philosophical or religious belief that impacts their decision on this. But, doctor, don't some people fill out the religious exemption form just because they want to get out of getting vaccinated or their children vaccinated? That's just a loophole, an excuse they can use.
Yes. And so it's interesting because certain health systems are saying, okay, you need to tell us that you don't use any of those products I just mentioned, the over-the-counter products that we all use. You need to tell us that you do not use any of those. You need to show us that you're actually actively going to church or, you know, whatever your place of worship is. And so it's interesting. There, some health systems are making patients jump through a few more loopholes before automatically saying, sure, you can have that religious exemption. And I'll also mention, I know I've heard that some Muslims are saying that there's possible pork products in these vaccines, and there are not. That is false. And so I do want to mention that's another religious exemption I've heard that's been asked. But, yeah, there's no pork products in this. So Muslims should be okay with receiving this these vaccines.
5492937. You know, that brings up another point, doctor. I'm sure you've heard every wild conspiracy theory in the book.
Yes,
when
ma'am.
It comes to this disease and when it comes to the vaccine. Now, you said that luckily the number of patients coming into your ER and ICU is going down. That said, can you, once again, because we do this a lot on this show, can you explain to everyone out there how dangerous this misinformation is when it comes to people believing just complete lies about the disease and about the vaccine?
Listen, Melissa, I've had an interesting go with COVID. You all know I've been since day one in the hospital taking care of hospitalized patients. And this third peak has been extremely difficult. And the main reason it's been so difficult is not only, number one, because our numbers were so high and, you know, all the systems, all the medical systems were overwhelmed with very, very sick people, younger, very, very sick people, but mostly unvaccinated sick people. And the reason it's been so frustrating is because there was so much time spent on all our parts, the nursing, the nurse practitioners, the physician assistants, all the physicians, in just educating misinformation, you know, speaking to people and explaining to them how their thoughts don't really align with science. And, you know, the frustrating thing is that takes so much time and it's mentally draining. I've had patients, to give an example, I've had patients where when they're ready to be discharged, I sit down with them and we have, you know, I've had anywhere from, you know, 5-minute conversation, no doc, I almost died, you're right, I'm going to get vaccinated when I get out of here, to hour-long conversation where I sit there and I actually have patients Google. I literally have them Google on their phone. I say, look up who, what vaccine President Trump got. Look up what vaccine DeSantis got. You know, how many senators are vaccinated. I actually sit down and have them Google this information to show them that, you know, certain people have been vaccinated. They obviously believe in these vaccines. And so misinformation kills people. And I've sat down and have spoken to people about how, no, there's not a computer chip. These are people that almost died in the hospital. They're about to go home, and I'm sitting down with them discussing, there's no computer chip in your vaccine. No, sir, there's not. You know, and all these different things that you hear, I've heard all of them. I've heard all of them, and I've had to explain all of them away. And I'll tell you, sometimes patients leave not convinced.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, do you feel like you get through or not?
Sometimes, yes. I would say the majority of the time I do, because I'm coming from a place of misinformation kills. I know that. I understand that a lot of people don't have access to the information I have access to and don't have the education level to understand the studies that come out. You know, just because a study comes out and it's on the internet doesn't mean it's a good study or it has anything based in science, right? So I know that. And so I'm really patient with people and just come from a place of, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on the vaccine? That's usually how I start my conversation and then just kind of let it go from there. A lot of non-judgment. I'm just kind of in the moment saying, listen, I've taken care of you for all these days. You know I'm on your team. You know I want to get you out of here alive. Let's talk about this. And I think towards the end of the hospitalization, the majority of patients have been like, okay, Dr. Aquino, I get it. I see where you're coming from. I know you've worked hard to keep me alive, get me home safe. I'm willing to talk about this now. So I think I've had some good success. I've only had one or two. And, you know, one of them was, no, that's the devil's work. I won't take those vaccines. And you know, and that person, their belief system is not based in science. That's a hard conversation to have with someone. And then another one was actually, you know, that has fetal cell lines. I won't take it. And that was a hard conversation. But that person, I think, did not get vaccinated either.
What's been so tragic about this era is that because there's been this weaponized effort to spread disinformation and misinformation. And as you pointed out, Doctor, these campaigns kill. What has been so tragic is that people literally have gone to their deaths sometimes refusing to accept reality, or they have to almost die to accept observable reality. It's really extraordinarily sad.
It is. It is. We've had patients die yelling at us, being mad at the medical doctor saying, I do not have COVID, as they are dying with COVID.
Yeah. Just unbelievable. 549-2937, Eric on the line. Eric, hello.
Good morning. I wonder if you have, you or your guest have heard, and maybe you discussed this, I'm not sure, but someone did a study recently and they came up with what they called the Dirty Dozen. And these are the 12 people that are most that are most responsible for the misinformation on the internet. It's a really comprehensive study. If you look up the Dirty Dozen.
And they're on Facebook. It's all Facebook pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I called the number. I watched some of these videos. I was curious. I saw the report on, I don't remember if it was CNN. So I watched the video. I called the number to his office, and it redirected me to another number where someone came on the line and asked me if I wanted to order vitamins to boost my immune system.
Mm-hmm.
This is unethical. You cannot be a quote-unquote MD and out there shilling vitamins and lying to people. This person should be his license should be taken. He should face criminal action or whatever, civil, everything. I mean, I don't know why we don't do anything about these things.
Thank you, Eric. You know, the Facebook whistleblower, Frances Haugen, she recently testified to Congress, Dr. Aquino, that Facebook is killing people by not fixing its algorithm. They could fix it, but they won't, she testified, because people are motivated by fear and anger. And pages that activate those sections of people's brains get clicked on more. And so because Facebook wants to keep making more money, it will not change its business operation so as to reduce the flow of deadly misinformation. Facebook, she testified, is a bad actor. Fox News has also been a prominent disseminator of vaccine misinformation, even though everyone at Fox News is required to either be vaccinated or tested weekly, which is profoundly hypocritical. And so these are bad actors preying on people's fears, preying on their tribal loyalties, and it is getting people killed. There is no other way to say it. It is getting people killed.
I agree. I see it in practice. And like I said, a lot of time spent in misinformation and discussing what the science is. And it's just, you know, when you say healthcare is exhausted, doctors are exhausted, nurses are exhausted, you know, it's frustrating. It's extremely frustrating to deal with people that all you want to do is, like, listen, you come in here, Mr. Smith, I'm on Team Smith. I just want to get you through this. I want to get you healthy, and I want to get you home. And, you know, we're all on your team, and you're fighting us every step of the way. It's exhausting, absolutely exhausting. And so it just makes the whole issue of this pandemic even more frustrating for everyone, for absolutely everyone.
Susan tweets the show, did COVID have an effect on the late Tommy Hazzouri? He had a transplant. Could his immunity have been compromised? Honestly, don't know the answer to that, Susan. But as we talk about the death of Colin Powell, who was 84 years old, who was a cancer patient, that is a reminder to all of us that seniors, cancer patients, immunocompromised people, young children, others all remain vulnerable to this disease. So as tiring as it can be to keep saying this, mask up, get vaccinated, and if you're eligible for a booster and your doctor advises it, get one. We'll continue to get the information out about that. In the meantime, Dr. Michelle Aquino, hospitalist at Baptist Health JAX, she's also medical correspondent for Action News. Thank you so much, as always, for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, and much more still ahead later. The Jaguars finally snap their very long losing streak. Josh Torres has a look at that, but up next.
Focus on, if you have multiple loans, I would say focus on debts with the highest rates first. I think that's, you know, kind of the best strategy there.
The Biden administration gives students breathing room on student loans, and we've got advice on getting debt free. It's all next.
The Florida Theater is proud to present The Gypsy Kings, featuring Nicholas Reyes. Show date is Tuesday, November 16th, showtime 8 p.m. Tickets available at floridatheater.com.
Well, the Biden administration is giving a little breathing room to college students paying back those onerous student loans. The latest extension for student loan repayment gives those who borrowed money for college a reprieve through January of 2022. The Department of Education also canceled $5.8 billion in student loan debt for borrowers with total and permanent disability and for students who were victims of fraud by colleges and universities. By mid-year 2021, nearly 500,000 applicants had their debts just wiped away. But that's still only 2% of overall total student debt loan in this country. And that debt will continue to be part of the national conversation about college affordability. Because let's face it, for most people, college isn't very affordable. So how do you borrow responsibly to pay for your education?
For more on that, I spoke with Tina Bodnar, Senior Vice President with Iberia Bank First Horizon, and here's that conversation. Hi, Tina. Good to be with you. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Melissa.
And parents, I know, are listening very closely right now as we talk about saving for college, student loans, paying down student loan debt. What can you share? Let's begin with, let's say you're in the student loan deferment period with your college student. Let's begin there. What advice do you have for people who are in the position of borrowing and they've seen that there's an extension for these repayments through January of 2022?
Yes, that was some good news for a lot of individuals, for sure. And I would say, you know, start to get prepped on how you're going to handle this. How are you going to handle paying the debt? I mean, focus on, if you have multiple loans, I would say focus on debts with the highest rates first. I think that's, you know, kind of the best strategy there. You could, you know, really work on the highest rate first and then work your way down to the lowest rate if you have multiple loans. But also if you have multiple loans, look for opportunities to consolidate. I know that student loans, the rates and the terms are usually the best out there, but it doesn't mean that they're not also competitive. And saving even 0.5% on a loan over the course of time can save thousands of dollars. Start to build your budget, too. One of the things that we work with here at Iberia Bank First Horizon when we help people with financial planning is, you know, how are they going to go into the workforce world out of college? And some of them try to live, you know, for a year or two, kind of like they're on a college budget so that they stay more disciplined to pay off the debt first. So making that your focus first is also, you know, a really big help. And, you know, when you get into the workforce, you want to, you know, contribute to company-sponsored plans, things like that, but also make sure paying down your debt is a high priority. And then, you know, you want to kind of going into it, because the, you know, student loan topic is kind of generational. Like you, when you are that student who's paying back the loans, it won't be long till you may be a parent yourself, helping your children to save for college, or a grandparent at some point helping save for college. So it's generational. So start the habits when you're a student, and then pass them on through the generations.
Sure. You know, it's interesting to note as we talk about college affordability, well, let's face it, it's not affordable the vast majority of people. This is interesting. The Department of Education has canceled nearly $6 billion in student loan debts for borrowers who have disability or students who were victims of fraud. About 500,000 applicants had their debts wiped away, but that's a drop in the bucket. 2% of overall total student debt loans. And so this is the only kind of debt that you can never really get relief from. It stays with you forever. So what do you think about calls to reform the way student loans are structured in America?
Well, I think that, you know, it has become quite unaffordable. And I think that it's a topic that definitely needs to be addressed. I don't think any of us quite know what the answers are. I think, you know, your best plan is always going to be setting yourself up for success in the beginning. There's a lot of planning that can go on. Like I said, like if you are that student with these loans, what are you going to now do with the next generation in planning? There is a lot of aid out there. There's scholarships, financial aid, grants. There's Florida. We're in the state of Florida. There's Florida Prepay. There's Bright Futures Scholarships. There's 529 plans that, you know, are create, you know, tax-deferred options and tax-free options when you're using it for education, for higher education, and that can be passed on. If your child doesn't use all of that, that can be passed on to the next generation as well. So I think we all kind of have to do our part. I think reform would be great. But for now, I think, you know, being responsible and coming up with a plan to set yourself up for success is really all we can control right now.
Yeah. Any other thoughts for parents and students as they stare down, many of them, what can be a mountain of debt?
Sure, it can be. But like I said, I think the advice we see this with, you know, you think about physicians who, you know, have enormous debt sometimes with, you know, the type of education they have to endure. But again, like going into their first year, live like they were a resident. You know, try to make it, pay off that debt, make it your number one focus, and, you know, work on it just one step at a time. Sitting down with financial planners, it sounds sometimes kind of ominous, but we find that we can help many, many families. We've got here at Iberia Bank First Horizon, we've got a private banking team, and it's comprised of myself, financial advisors, and certified financial planners, because it's not one size fits all, you know, on how to pay for education. We can help in the, you know, in figuring out the loan options as well as figuring out the savings options. And I think it's important to look at it holistically. That would be my advice.
Thanks, Tina. She's Tina Bodnar, Senior Vice President, Private Banking, Relationship Manager at Iberia Bank First Horizon here in Jacksonville. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Melissa. My pleasure.
Well, Memorial Hospital is planning a drug take-back day to help crush the opioid crisis. This is coming up Saturday. We've got a preview. Dr. Ron McGuire, Pharmacy Operations Manager at Memorial, is on the line. Doctor, good morning. Dr. McGuire, good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, good to talk to you. So this effort at Memorial over at Beach and University, this is part of a national initiative to crush the opioid epidemic. What's happening?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for having me this morning. Yes, this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. At our medical office building here at Memorial Hospital, we're having a take-back day. And it's an opioid take-back day called Crush the Crisis. Nationally, we have health systems and law enforcement taking back drugs out of the community on Saturday. This event's usually held twice a year in October and April, but we're having a special event here in October this weekend to take these medications out of the community and dispose of them properly.
And you're asking people to turn in any unused or expired meds for safe disposal. What are you accepting? What kinds of meds?
Absolutely. We're really looking to take a lot of the opioids and narcotic medications, the prescription medications, back out of the community if they're not used and unneeded, unwanted. We're really looking to take back opioid prescriptions, whether it's Percocet, Lortab, Dilaudid, these different medications that sometimes people get prescribed like after surgery or after a dental procedure. You'd be surprised many people may not use that prescription or may not use the whole prescription, and they find it in their kitchen cabinet or their medicine cabinet, and they really don't need it. And sometimes that's really a source of where people can access that and use it in a bad way in the community. So we're just hopeful people can bring those medications that are unused, unneeded, to the take-back day on Saturday. We would accept any prescription meds, really, but we're really targeting the opioids to take them off the streets and out of the households to really make it a safer situation and make them less accessible, unusable, unretrievable, as we partner with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office to really take those medications back and dispose of them properly.
Can you explain why it's better to hand them in to a hospital like Memorial rather than just throw them in the trash?
Absolutely. This is a great question. And, you know, what many people may not realize is a lot of times when we throw some of the prescription medication, particularly narcotics, in the trash or sometimes, you know, people would, you know, they're not rendered unretrievable. Some of the guidance now is that, you know, if you have prescription medications, maybe that aren't opioids, you could actually dispose of them in coffee grounds in your general trash. But there are some environmental concerns with some of that. So there's not only a safety concern with opioids, but just we want these drugs to be disposed of properly. And there's different disposal methods that are done when we take them back out of the community through this channel. So we're hopeful that we can do that. And in general, you know, when we look at drug disposal, we just really want the situation, particularly with opioids, to make these drugs inaccessible. And I think, you know, people in our community, if they're not using these drugs and they feel like, hey, I don't really want that on my shelf, I don't have any need for it, we're happy to take those back and make sure they're disposed of properly. So there's no environmental impacts.
You know, there's been so much focus on the pandemic and that incredibly worrisome threat to public health. It's sort of put the opioid crisis on the back burner, but it's a huge public health issue in our area and nationally. Can you talk about the ongoing toll in our area, especially from opiates, and what you're seeing at Memorial Hospital?
Absolutely. Recently, state laws have become very strict. I mean, a lot of these drugs by prescription aren't as accessible as they used to be. A lot of prescriptions for opioids are limited to 3 days and 7 days in the state of Florida. But what's, you know, you bring up the pandemic, and it's so important to talk with the community, because over this past year and a half, many have been really, shut in their households, working from home, probably didn't get out as much. And unfortunately, people get to exploring households and may find these drugs in cabinets and medicine cabinets. And so, you know, the pandemic certainly has, I wouldn't say exacerbated the issue of opioids that are misused, but really have made it a big problem that we really have to continue to address.
Absolutely. You know, it's something that is just in the background. It doesn't get the attention, but people continue to use and abuse these drugs. And is the stress of the pandemic maybe even also playing into people turning to these kinds of narcotics?
Absolutely. We've been very concerned about the mental health of our community and our neighbors throughout the pandemic. And unfortunately, when these drugs are accessible, and they may not be your prescription, and they're accessible, and everyone's, you know, possibly looking for something to take the pain away. And unfortunately, that could be the pain of dealing with the anxiety that the pandemic's brought on, or the pain of losing loved ones or having loved ones sick. It's been a very difficult year for many. And we just want to tell folks that, hey, you know, you don't need to use those medications if they're not prescribed for you, if they're not needed. We can take those back and take that danger, that safety issue away and dispose of it properly. Because many folks don't understand that, you know, just because you find a medication on the counter or on the kitchen cabinet or medicine cabinet, those medications could be expired, they could be years old, and they certainly weren't prescribed for you. So we're just hopeful people would avoid using medications that aren't prescribed for them, or medications that, well, you know, that was prescribed 3 years ago for a surgery you had. You obviously have no need for it now. I can tell you from my clinical experience, a lot of times post-surgery or post-dental procedures, people use, you know, very little of those prescriptions. Even when they're 3 and 7 days, you'd be surprised how often people don't use any of those post-op pain medications. Mind you, some do and some need them, but a lot of the time they don't. And that's what we're targeting, is those medications that, hey, they're not used, they're opioids, they're Percocets, they're Oxycontins. There's things that we can really take back from you working with the JSO and dispose of them properly.
So with all of that said, help crush the opioid crisis this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Memorial Hospital at their medical office building entrance, 3627 University Boulevard South. Turn in all of your unused and expired medication for safe disposal. Tablets, capsules, patches, hydrocodone, oxycodone, codeine, fentanyl, morphine, other forms of the drug, and any other unused meds. Bring them by, drop them off. Thanks, doctor. He's Dr. Ron McGuire, Pharmacy Operations Manager at Memorial Hospital. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Melissa.
All right. A quick break, and in a moment, after 20 straight losses, the Jaguars had to cross the ocean to win a game. Sports analyst Josh Torres has a look at that in just a few minutes. We'll be right back.
Mayo Clinic. When you are searching for answers that can provide some clarity in the confusion and could actually change your life, you know where to go. Mayo Clinic. Learn more at mayoclinic.org/Florida.
Vistar believes that more convenience is better, so they've extended their call center and online chat hours from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day of the week. Learn more about all that Vistar has to offer at vistarcu.org.
Dr. Talithia Williams, host of Nova Wonders, math professor, and passionate STEM advocate, will be the morning keynote speaker at Teach on Saturday, November 13th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront. Hear from Dr. Williams and some of the best local educators at this day-long conference for educators of all grades. Visit wjct.org/teach for tickets.
I'm Scott Tong. Student-athletes are back in college for the first time since the Supreme Court allowed them to monetize their name, image, and likeness. How's it going?
Student-athletes are not getting the types of sponsorship deals they may have expected. Hundreds of thousands of dollars are generally not drifting down from heaven like manna on students.
That's the next time on Here and Now.
Today at 1 on WJCT News 89.9.
Brandon Jackson is one of more than 1,500 people still in prison in Louisiana on a non-unanimous verdict. It's a practice that goes back to Jim Crow and was ruled unconstitutional last year by the Supreme Court. The state says his conviction stands. Now a new investigation is asking a simple question. Why? That story and more next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Yesterday in London, they had to cross the ocean to win a game. Sports analyst Josh Torres is here now with a recap. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Melissa.
All right. So tell us your take on this whole matchup over at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London.
Yes, Melissa. The Jags were going into that game 0-5, trying to find a way to get that first win under their belt. And everybody, I said one day I would come here with good news, and today's finally that day. Yes, the game started off, offense looked like they were moving pretty well. Miami scored early to take a 7-0 lead. Jags were able to march on the field, weren't able to convert a touchdown, but did finally make their first field goal of the year. Kicker Matthew Wright won the competition this week again over Josh Lambo to take kicking duties for the game. And then from there on, it was kind of a battle, who could score first. They kind of traded back with going three and outs, punting, and all those kind of things. And finally, at halftime, Trevor Lawrence threw a beautiful pass to Marvin Jones Jr., exactly placed it where only Jones could get it, and the Jags ended up going into halftime down 13-10. They opened up the second half with a great TD drive that was capped off by the man, James Robinson, a guy who everybody says needs to have way more touches with the ball to take their a nice 17-13 lead. Unfortunately, Miami did come back to take a lead 20-17 late in the fourth quarter before the Jags marched and made an absolutely unbelievable 54-yard field goal from Matthew Wright to tie the game at 20-all. This kick, if you watched it, you know it looked like it was going to miss altogether. Then just it was like heaven just looked down on the Jags and caused it to curve back in and go through the uprights. Then late in the game, with just a little over a minute remaining, the Jags got the ball back, got held up pretty hard. Then on a fourth down play, they threw a very, very quick pass to set up a first down with literally 1 second on the clock, called a timeout, and then Matthew Wright kicked a 53-yard field goal to snap the 20-game losing streak and give the Jags their first win, 23-20. Trevor Lawrence and Coach Urban Meyer got their first win. Trevor had a really good game. He did have one fumble on a strip sack, but overall, he finished 25 for 41 with 319 yards and a TD pass. James Robinson also had 73 rushing yards and a touchdown of his own. This game definitely helped Urban Meyer with everything that's been going on with him.
Yeah, for sure.
He definitely took a little bit of the heat off of himself, but unfortunately, with Matthew Wright's performance yesterday, this probably means the end of Josh Lambeau's time with the Jags, especially because there is a rule that since Matthew Wright was originally signed to the practice squad before being elevated to the active roster, the Jags need to either keep him on the practice squad for the rest of the year or give him an active roster spot. So more than likely, Josh Lambeau will be heading out of the Jaguars team.
Yeah, you know, and it, going even beyond that, Josh, the Atlanta Falcons beat the Jets in London last week, then the Jaguars with this dramatic last second victory to beat Miami in London. There's a real fan base developing in London for American style football, which has really increased speculation about whether the Jaguars or maybe an expansion team could make a move soon across the Atlantic.
That
we'll have to see.
As much as people would like to say that, that's never going to happen.
Why is that?
It is the fact they would need several teams over on that continent before I would even imagine them being able to do that constantly, to have to spend money to send eight teams across to London every single year to play.
So you think the logistics would be too difficult?
Yes, absolutely.
Interesting. All right, let's talk college football.
Yes, the number 20 ranked Florida Gators went on over to Baton Rouge to take on LSU, and it was a complete shootout of a game, but the Gators unfortunately did fall 49-42. It's their third loss of the season, a season where a lot of people had them pick as a dark horse to make it to the college football playoffs. UF, they allowed 321 total rushing yards, and quarterbacks Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson both had two interceptions. Not what the Gators needed to really get something out of this season. They dropped to 4-3. The newly ranked number 1 Georgia Bulldogs took on number 11 Kentucky, two undefeated teams going against each other, and Georgia once again dominated 30-13, their defense only allowing 51 total rushing yards the entire game. And then our last game we wanted to look at was Miami. They took on UNC, another shootout game, but unfortunately football was not Miami's sport this week, as they lost 45-42 to drop to 2-4 on their season, with FSU having a bye week. And really quickly before we go, I do want to give a huge shout out to my alma mater, UNF, whose women's basketball team made history last week, being ranked number 2 in the A-Sun preseason poll, and they even received a couple first-place votes, as well as sisters Jazz and Jada Bonnell, along with Marissa Mackins, who were both all three selected to the A-Sun All-Conference preseason team. And Jada also was named the A-Sun preseason defensive player of the year.
Nice.
It was Jazz who was. And so, you know, I want to send a huge congratulations to their team and Coach Derek Gibbs.
Go Ospreys. Josh
Swoop.
Torres. Yes, yeah, Swoop. Thanks, Josh. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for being with us. Have a great Monday. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Enjoy the start of a cooler work week.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.